Good morning, all. It's another beautiful day. Your attention, please.
Hey there, thanks for coming back to check out Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. This week we're covering Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. And in the notes this week we have a few fun things. We have a link to the song from which the title of this episode gets its name, as well as some links to the band Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, that we talk about a little bit at the end of this episode. They're very cool, you should definitely check them out. That's about it, so enjoy Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. Good morning. Welcome again to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. My name is Clay McCormick from EatDeadMeat.com, and with me again is Wes Teasdale from the Penske File. How are you doing, Wes?
Good, Clay. How are you?
I'm good.
we're amped up. We're ready to go on a Saturday morning. You got to bring your energy. It's you forget how much podcasting is just radio voice, right?
Yeah. I still haven't found my radio voice that I'm trying to work on. I have my podcasting voice where I can talk about whatever thing I want, but then I have my Quiet Storm voice.
Let's get to traffic from Route 2. Route 2, checking in. Route 2.
Weather, everything looks good from up here. Anyway, so I was thinking, we're back in the studio. We had an unintentional week off last week. I was considering just replacing this new episode with an episode made from cut-up versions of our past episode, because that's what they did on the show. So why not just do it on the podcast as well?
That's funny, because in the Star Trek podcast, we're up to Shades of Grey, which is also a clip show.
Oof.
And I was considering going through and just clipping out bits. I was gonna write a script that we'd be like, we'd be here podcasting, and we'd have just insert clips of past podcasts to like talk about them as something was going wrong.
That's a really interesting idea. But we should do that.
The problem with it is, as much as you dismiss like a clip show or something that's mostly stock,
yeah,
it's a ton of work to cut the bits. You have to listen to all the things to hear clips that you want to take out.
Right.
Then you have to cut them out, and then you have to write something to fit them in.
Right.
So as lazy as it seems, it's actually quite a bit of work.
Well, unless you're this episode of The Prisoner, which is about 88% shots of someone driving around the city.
Yes.
Which is really easy to cut together.
This episode had the... do you want to tell them what we're talking about?
I do. Of course, we are talking about episode 13 in our order, which is Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. This episode was written by Vincent Tilsley, who is a veteran of the show. He wrote Chimes of Big Ben, which, well, we can get into why this isn't a great episode later. But and it's directed by Pat Jackson, another veteran of the show. This week's number two's name was Clifford Evans. And we have another person we should talk about whose name is Nigel Stock, who, for the majority of the episode, plays number six.
Okay. Nigel Stock.
Yes.
Yep.
Because the basic premise of this episode is the village has come across this, has come into this technology that allows you to switch a mind into another body.
Yep.
And I guess they don't know how to do it back.
Yes.
So they want to... So they're trying to get the guy who invented the technology to the village so he can tell them how to reverse the process. And the way that they go about this is by switching Six's mind into the mind of this guy, into the body of this character named the Colonel, who was played by Nigel Stock.
Yep.
Sending him back to Britain, out of the village. And
sending number Six in this guy's body out into the real world. Yep.
And then basically hoping that his confusion will drive him to find this guy, because Six knows this guy who created the mind swap technology.
Yep.
So they hope that his confusion and desperation to get back into his own body will send him to find this scientist
yeah.
who can then reverse the process. And along the way, we learn some interesting things about number six that we never knew before and probably shouldn't have learned ever, which is that he has a fiance named Janet, who is also his boss's daughter.
Yep, he works in a nepotism business, yeah. basically. He's just a spy working for his wife's father.
He apparently had some sort of crazy weekend involving the guy behind the doors or the secretary at the bottom of that ramp that he walks down at the beginning of the episodes.
Yep.
Who is not played by George Markstein because he's off the show at this point, but we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. And... So he kind of gets his he finds the scientist through a pretty standard spy show kind of, you know, 1, 2, and 3.
Are you just explaining the plot or do you want to talk
about
it?
I'm just going to go through the plot. And then the whole time the village has been sending a guy keeping tabs on him, so when Six finds the professor or I'm sorry, the scientist, the guy from the village uses the nerve gas gun that we saw in Schizoid Man, but didn't get to see what it does.
Yes. Does not squirt.
No, it does not squirt. It's more of a mist.
Yes, it's a fine misting. Those fans that have the water attached so you can spray yourself to. It's basically what he gets hit with.
Make sure you don't grab that on your way out before you go running. And then, they wake up back in the village and they make the scientists do the reversal procedure and the scientist pulls a quick one on the village by saying in order to reverse the minds, you need a third mind as sort of like a conductor. And he gets in the middle. They go through the process. Six gets his mind back, but the scientist puts his own mind into the body of the colonel.
Yep.
And the colonel manages to get out of there while the body of the old scientist dies.
Yes, killing the colonel.
Killing the colonel. And then we have a really great 30 seconds of Patrick McGoohan in this episode at the end where he very expositorily explains everything that just happened.
Yep.
And that's the end of the episode.
I'd appreciate knowing my duties as soon as possible.
You've no idea why you're here.
All I know is I was sent here by the highest authority.
You were indeed. You should feel very proud.
I'm gratified, certainly. And now, if you'd be kind enough to explain what I'm supposed to do.
So, do you have any thoughts on this at the top?
I thought this was I liked the concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording two in a row here, not to go anything ahead, but both of the ones that we're going to talk about, including this one, are unusual concepts for the show mm-hmm. to do. And I like this one for maybe the first 5 minutes, I think. And then it all just falls apart, mostly, I think, because the guy makes no effort to act like McGoohan.
Yeah.
Which is...
Well, they have the same handwriting, so that counts
right.
for something.
They go through this whole thing of... they have the same handwriting, but he doesn't do anything else... remotely like McGoohan.
Not at all.
And it's like, why? I was even confused as to what was going on when he wakes up in his apartment as the other guy.
Yeah.
I thought for a minute that he was just seeing himself in his old body and he was actually in McGoohan's body.
Yep.
And that people were reacting to him as if he was number six.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case at all.
No.
I just thought it was really a mess after basically introducing what goes on.
Yeah. I think this episode's a pile of dog shit. With a caveat. Because I think there's some stuff in here that could have been interesting, and we can talk about it later, because the original script for this episode is a lot more interesting, and it's a lot better story. But due to the circumstances of the production of this episode, it got rewritten and apparently nobody bothered to do that in a way that made any sense.
Right.
And you end up with this piece of garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, the main reasons I think it doesn't work is, let's talk about some of the backstory. So the interesting thing about this episode is this episode, if you've watched it, you'll know that Patrick McGoohan is only in it for about, I don't know, a minute and a half.
Yeah, including stock footage.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay, including stock footage, 2 minutes.
And his double.
Yeah. And the reason for that is, at the time that they were making this episode, he was in America shooting a movie called Ice Station Zebra, which is, you know, it's an okay movie. It's about it's a pretty standard submarine, there's a mole on the ship kind of thing. And it's an okay movie that's boosted by his presence because he's good in everything.
Yep.
And so, I get, according to the writer of this episode, it was kind of a last-minute thing where he, or as far as he knew anyway, where he came in and he had some ideas for the next show he was going to write, and the assistant director, David Tomlin, said, before you go any further, whatever you're going to say, we have a problem. Patrick's going to America for however many weeks, so you have to write an episode that doesn't take place in Port Marion and doesn't have Patrick McGoohan in it.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two elements of the show that make it The Prisoner. I mean, those are the two defining elements of the show.
Why couldn't they be in Port Marion?
I don't know. I think. Well, this episode was shot 14th.
Yeah.
So this is these last couple we're watching were all shot pretty much in order.
Yeah.
And I think by this point they were just out of there. Didn't have any time to go back to Port Marion and shoot anything.
Which I kind of enjoy.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, so this also has a different format than a lot of the other episodes. You've got a different beginning where this is the first and only episode that has a cold opening, where the first scene in the show isn't the opening with the thunderclap and the car driving. It's a you're inside the office of who we find out to be Number Six's boss,
yep.
And they're looking at some pictures on a slide projector, and they set up this thing of they're trying to find the scientist named Seltzman for whatever reason. They don't explain exactly what it is at the time.
Yep.
And only at that point do they go into the regular opening with the thunderclap and the car driving and the resigning and all that.
Yep. Yep.
Also, this episode does not have the We Want Information interlude between the opening credits and the beginning of the show.
Yep.
It just does the credits and then jumps right into it. And the structure of this show, the style of show episode that this is, I think is one of the downfalls of it is it's basically a bad episode of The Prisoner, but it's like an okay episode of just like a generic spy show. Because it's set up very much like a spy show. This has a lot more in common with Danger Man than it does The Prisoner.
Yes. Okay.
Because a lot of those shows, Danger Man especially, has the cold open where they kind of set up the plot.
Yep.
And then they kind of get into it. There's even a character. I don't know if we should talk about this later, but I'll mention it now. There's a character in this episode named Potter, who is the guy featured in the gratuitous towards the end of the episode. And one of the things that makes people's minds go screwy when they try to figure out whether or not the prisoner is actually John Drake from Danger Man is that in Danger Man, there is a character named Potter who is kind of the same kind of character as he is in this episode.
Yep.
And in two more episodes from now, The Girl Who Was Death, that character played by a different actor shows up again, or at least a character with the same name.
Oh, okay.
So that's what's making people kind of go, one of the things make people go screwy.
Sure.
So one of the, this change in structure was apparently due, or at least style, was apparently due to the fact that, and I think I mentioned in the first episode that they had at the front of the production of the series, they had decided on 17 episodes.
Right.
They had actually decided on 13 episodes for the first season, and then they were going to get renewed for a second season. So that's where the number 26 episodes popping up, and that makes more sense now to me.
Yeah, double.
That it would be a second season. Let me tell you, looking up stuff on this episode, you get into a rabbit hole of information and theory and There's a lot more websites about the prisoner and like dissections and
yep.
than I thought there was, and it's you can get off track very quickly.
they all I've actually Googled a little bit too, and they all have sort of weird dated email URL addresses. Yeah. They're all like multiple dot. It's like you're hitting like GeoCities yep. sites and stuff from a blast in the past.
Well, prisoner.angelfire is a is a an authority on the subject.
Yeah, you know. Good information never goes bad.
Just bear in mind your ultimate objective.
We want information. Information!
So after the initial block of 13, they had gotten renewed for a second 13.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were going to do was they were actually going to change the format of the show to have six get out of the village more and do more spy type things. And I read, according to a couple sources, that the idea was to have six be going on like missions for, you know, being used as a tool by the village to go on missions and stuff, kind of like he is in this episode. And
yeah, hopefully there'd be more stakes on him. He has very low stakes.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Everything about this episode is, But so that was going to be the new format, where it was going to be more of a traditional spy show.
Sure.
But then CBS or whoever was backing it pulled out and said, all right, well, we're not going to do a second season. I think because the last couple episodes had dipped in ratings. So they said, just do four episodes and wrap it up and we'll call it a day.
Yeah.
And at this point, before the production of Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, this is when George Markstein leaves. This is when a lot of other people leave from the original crew.
Yep.
So it feels a little bit different. I know that from, again, I was doing some digging, trying to find exactly why Markstein left. The closest I could find as to an explanation was that Markstein didn't like the direction the show had been going in. He hadn't liked it from the get-go. He wanted a more traditional spy show, and McGoohan wanted what he got.
Right.
And so Markstein wasn't happy with the direction of the show, and also he wasn't happy with McGoohan taking so much control.
Yep.
And so they had a giant, you know, bitter feud, and Markstein left. It kind of makes sense from what I've read and what I've interviews I've seen. It sounds like Markstein was, I don't want to say jealous, but I think he wanted a lot more control than he had. For a concept, for a show that he was under the impression that he created.
Yep.
Where, as we've talked about before, I think it was a lot more of a group effort than Markstein wants to believe, and probably even McGoohan wants to believe.
Right. McGoohan's only credited as a creator, right? He's the only creditor.
Yeah.
He's the only creator credit.
Well, I don't know. In the show, is he? Yeah,
I think so.
Well, since then, they basically credit it to McGoohan, David Tomblin, and Markstein.
Oh, okay.
But I think, as we've talked about before, I think the extent of... It's pretty much, at this point, accepted that the extent of Markstein's involvement in the creation was he came up with the initial concept of where do secret agents go when they retire.
Yep.
That this idea of a prison kind of thing where, you know, where they would put people of high value.
Yes.
But clearly, McGoohan took that concept and just ran with it.
Yep.
And, you know, I can see why that would make Markstein kind of pissed off.
Yeah. I mean, financials aside.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get the paychecks if you don't get the credit. Although, none of them wrote the pilot, right? The British system seems to be different. I don't think Arrival was written by either of them.
I can't remember the name on the official name on the episode.
Yeah,
but I believe it is accepted that the three of them did work out the pilot.
Okay,
but I could be mistaken.
I'll double check it now. But I mean, you can continue with. I mean, I couldn't blame Markstein for leaving at mm-hmm. that point, and I do think if this is the first episode that they did without him around.
Yeah.
It is totally different.
Yeah.
Not that it's a good episode, yeah. but it's a totally different focus. And the one after this is a totally different focus.
Mm.
And it's interesting, I think, because yeah, not to go too far. It's difficult because I think the second one illuminates a lot more of the changes that are going on here.
Yeah.
I think the way that these, this one, and I'll just say that Living in Harmony is the next one.
Right.
I preferred what the show was doing in these two episodes.
Yeah.
To what had been previously done in the first 13, mm-hmm. Which is interesting. And it was like, this one really does deal with identity.
Yeah.
Like he's switched his identity. It's all fucked up because none of the plot really makes sense as to why these things are happening. And him having a fiance seems out of touch. And the way he interacts with his fiance is not any way that number six would interact with anybody. He's so tame. And I also don't believe that number six would be driven to get his body back. What you're saying is that he wants to get out of the village, but he only wants to do it as himself.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I just think it's kind of a weird, it's not the character that the rest of the show has been showing us.
Right. I think the idea of a good show is in here. And I actually think there's the idea of an episode that follows thematically the same things that we've been talking about up to this point, I think is in there.
Yep.
I just don't think they did it very well.
And yeah.
They didn't, I don't know if they were really trying to do that, because the change in this episode was not only is Markstein not there as the script editor, but McGoohan's not there either.
Right.
And as we've established on pretty much every episode, McGoohan has his fingers in the pie to some extent, whether or not he's thrown the cook out and baked the pie himself.
Right.
Or if he's just the one cutting the pieces. This is a great metaphor. I should keep going with this.
Write this one down.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Arrival was written by Markstein and Tomblin.
It was. Okay. Okay.
So that makes... So how can you not give him a credit at that point?
Right.
All right. Interesting.
So Markstein's gone. His name's no longer in the credits. And with... You know, say what you want about his contributions to the show. Clearly, not having him there was a detriment, at least to this episode.
Yes.
And it's I was watching an interview with the writer, and his explanation. He talks about how he wrote the script, sent it in, and McGoohan wasn't there to really sign off on it, so. They just kind of went along and rewrote it and et cetera, et cetera. And it's not that they turned a bad script into a worse script. It's that they turned a bad script into a different kind of bad script.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, he goes on to say that, you know, this is the best he could do with the ideas. Like, this is the only idea I could think of.
Yeah.
Bad day. Let's see. It's Janet's birthday present. Hope she likes it. Can always change it if she doesn't. What's on for today? Let's see. Car service, dentist appointment. No. We have to cancel that because Sir Charles' lunches, they go on forever. But who can blame him? He's the boss. Diddly-bop. Diddly-bop.
Why do you think this episode doesn't work?
Doesn't work because... And I guess it doesn't work because McGoohan's presence is too important to the show.
Yeah.
And when you focused on... All I could really think of was the movie Face Off with, you know?
Yeah.
Which
there's another similarity to Face Off that I'll talk about when we're done.
You know, what makes Face Off great is that the actors are hamming it up playing each other.
Right.
You know, like, Cage is doing a Travolta impersonation. So it's, like, funny to watch. This guy comes in and plays it. I'm sure he's probably never seen an episode before, but he comes in and plays Six completely wrong. And I don't even think the script writes Six correctly.
No.
He is someone who is always going to be agitated and trying to explain things to people. And when they're like, you're not him. And he comes in, he's just like, whatever. He just kind of goes along with it instead of like, I'd imagine if this was really number six, he would grab his fiance and shake her, you know, and be like, it's me, damn it. Remember when we went to, you know, Port Marion for that weekend vacation? And he doesn't do any of that. He's not angry at all.
Yep.
And even when he's doing his inner monologue, which I thought was hysterical.
That was so stupid. It's like, it's such a, he's we like, need to get McGoohan in here somehow. Let's just have him fart out. It's like the voiceover in Blade Runner.
It's a point of view. He's basically just going like, doop doo doo doo. Let me put my hand out. Oh, there's my hand. Gonna open up the door. It's like this is his inner monologue. Yeah,
what is this? Is this a floor I'm walking on? Some sort of rug contraption.
But I think that's the major problem, that he's supposed to be six stuck in a different body, and he's nothing like six. To the point where that's the reason it becomes a standard spy thing, because you have nothing else to do at that point.
Yeah.
And it's like his drive to get out of the village happens here,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't remark on it. He's not like, this is interesting or I need to get back. He's really just, I want my body back, so I better go find the guy and bring him back to the village.
Yeah.
And then I'll get my body back.
Yeah. This episode is just the definition of filler.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even, like we were saying about clip shows, at least clip shows require some sort of framing device. This one is just stock shots. This is, you know, this isn't a clip show. This is a shit we need to fill 40 minutes show.
Yeah. Yep. The most glaring stock shot, I think, was when the taxi in the beginning, and it mm-hmm. drives past the two guys in top coats, or like the top hats and coats. I was like, oh, this is Arrival. This is all Arrival
and
footage.
It's probably a lot easier to tell now on big screens in HD than it was in the 60s, but every shot of him driving the car is actually McGoohan or a stunt double.
Yep.
It's not Nigel Stock.
Yes, yeah. I loved the...
Fitting name for the actor, given what this episode is filled with.
Yeah. He's a little bit stocky. He's filled with stock footage. I love the where they're like, go get number six. And the guy's like, hut, 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 hut. And they run into his house and they drag out clearly his double. Yeah, he's wearing a wig. And it's just kicking.
Making sure to keep his head, the back of his head, to the camera at all times. Yeah.
I love that. And then they put him in the back of the car and they cover him with a blanket. And they're just like, that's him. We got him. We got that sumbitch.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem, the biggest problem here, to kind of expand on what you were saying about the way that they write Six and his character, is that the plot of this episode doesn't really matter to Six. I mean, like you're saying, it does in that he wants to get his body back, but there's no, like, existential... battle that Six is trying to have over himself or his, it's taking everything that makes Six interesting as a character, getting rid of that, and just plugging him into a pretty boring spy story.
Right. Yeah.
I actually thought some of the spy stuff was pretty good. I liked the thing with the
projector.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
I thought it was cool. It went on very long.
Yes. Yeah.
For like the minute he starts doing it, I'm like, oh, this is what he's gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I was watching it, just thinking like, wow, they had to fill 5 minutes, and they're just going to show you every bit of coverage they had from this scene of him figuring it out. It was cool to see.
Yeah.
And it's nice to, you know, it's a, it shows Six's ability to figure things out, which isn't always stressed, like his ability to sort of solve a problem, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, the other thing that this episode does is it very firmly plants it in a Cold War era spy thing, more than we've ever seen.
Yep.
Because it's actually giving a almost an independent maliciousness to the village. Because in the beginning they talk about number two talks about
number two wearing a terrible wig too.
Yeah, probably the worst thing about this. You know what? every other episode of the show, I remember what number two looks like.
Yeah.
I did not remember this guy at all. It just goes to show you how disposable this episode
is. Yeah, I just remember his wig because his hair like clearly just hits the point where his real hair is, and it just sinks into his head. It's, and it, like the Cold War thing of just the map when he's like driving to Austria or whatever. And, like, and it's just very old, like World War II-y kind of thing.
And what they towards the beginning of the episode, number two has this comment about the reason that they want the scientist who created this body swapping technology, which they explain as it's like a throwaway line of dialogue, but he's like, you know how there are some yogis who can meditate to the point of like having their mind leave their body? Well, this scientist has turned that into a machine and can transplant brains into other bodies.
Yeah, that was one of my, I laughed when they said it. They said it was a process of thought transference created in India.
Yes.
I was just like, oh, that's fascinating.
The exotic Orient always covering your plot holes for you.
Yes. Yep.
But he, number two then goes on to say how they want this technology because it would allow them to have agents infiltrating and basically, you know, like sleeper cells kind of thing.
Yep.
And
makes sense.
It makes sense, but that's the first time that the village has ever expressed an outward, I don't know if maliciousness is the word, but
just aims to sort of get out into the world.
Like it's turning the village into like Spectre from James Bond. Where it's giving them some sort of motivation outside of the village walls.
Oh, well, what was that episode where one of them was waxing on about how they want the village to become a global state of being? I feel like there's one.
Oh, that's right. In Chimes, that's actually interesting, yeah, because it's written by the same guy. Chimes of Big Ben has
was that
two.
That was that guy. Yeah, just saying that they want to impart the way the village works on the rest of the world.
Yeah, but that's not really what he's talking about here, though. It sounds more like...
It sounds like he wants to create spies that can just easily get into places.
Yeah, it's not like an expanding of ethos. It's more of like a, we can have arms in every sort of government, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, it's the most blatant... allegory? Is that the word? It's the most blatant representation of Stalinist Russia, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
Where you have the collectivism of the village combined with we want to export this and like have people go out into the world and sort of mess around with things.
And it also kind of, would you say that it eliminates the idea that the English government could be behind the village?
No.
No.
I don't. I think it could. I don't think the general tone of the show, well, no. No, I don't think so. I don't think it eliminates any. I think they're vague enough where you could go either way with what's going on.
I was thinking at first that it did because they were clearly acting as like their own entity.
Yep.
And when the mind of Six goes back to, again, back to the place that he worked, God knows why they keep doing that, because it never works out well. They make no mention of his disappearance or anything.
Yeah.
Which is really weird, because they don't. I mean, the only time it gets mentioned really is when he meets his fiance and he wakes up. So when Six wakes up back in England.
Yep.
He thinks it's his fiance's birthday, and then he runs into her, and he's like, oh, I just saw you last night, and she's like, what are you talking about?
Who like, are you?
Like, kind of like Rick James. That was weeks ago, motherfucker. She's like, that was a year ago, and he's like, a year, you know, and she doesn't know where he's been, but she's still going to his house for some reason.
But wait, isn't he the colonel at this
point? Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I didn't understand any of their interactions. Why was she not alarmed that he was in their house?
She was alarmed, but not as much as she should have been. Okay. Not nearly as much as she should have been.
Right. That's why that scene caused me to wonder whether or not he was seeing himself just as his true body. You know what I mean? I couldn't understand what was being transferred.
Well, here's the biggest problem with this episode. Why wouldn't you do it the other way? Put the other guy's brain in Six's body and send Six back. Because everyone's going to trust him.
Right, yeah.
Why wouldn't...
was his body just hanging out in the lab?
Yeah, he was just like sleeping. Ugh. He was just there with those welding goggles on.
No, that's a good... Well, I guess because they wanted the scientist, right? They could have killed two birds with one stone, sent both of them back.
Yeah.
And have Six go get the scientist and the other guy infiltrate Six's work and or whatever and figure out. Oh, it's all very confused. I think that the episode's problem is that it's confused about They have this idea that they want to do.
Yeah.
But there's no good outlet for either of the options that you've got. You've got six in this guy's body.
Yeah.
So you just send him back. And you have this other guy that can't figure out what to do because they six worked for them, technically. So all they need to know why he resigned, and they can't get that from him. So he has to sit in the lab while six just goes out and rescues this other guy.
Yeah. See, now, I think here, I mean, obviously you can't do this because the point of the episode is that you need to be able to do it without McGoohan.
Yep.
So you can't put another person's mind into Six's body and then send Six back and follow Six.
Yes.
Unless you do it the way they do it in some other shows where, did you ever see that episode of The X-Files where Mulder and Michael McKean get their brains switched?
No, I don't think so.
So there's a weird alien phenomenon and they get their minds switched, right? But for the remainder of the episode, you're still seeing... even though Michael McKean's brain is in Mulder's body, you're seeing Michael McKean.
Right.
Unless he goes into a mirror and then you see Mulder.
Right. It's like Quantum Leap.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's just like Quantum Leap. Now, they could have done it that way and still made it work to an extent. I don't know if it would have been more confusing or what.
I think it might have been more... Quantum Leap's able to do it because it becomes a recurrent... Like, you get used to it and you're just like, oh, he's always going to look like that. And the thing about Quantum Leap is I always wondered if he was in a woman's body and he had sex... What the hell would that look
like? That's a really good
question. What would that look like? Because that's a little bit upsetting. But I think that's what I was saying. I thought it happened. I thought he was seeing himself as that, even though that's not really what was happening. But it was very confusing because his fiance reacts so blandly to some stranger just sort of
wearing his pajamas and just apparently sleeping in their house and knowing weird intimate details about their lives. He's like, no, oh, stop it. Who are you?
You should go see my father.
You're such a
your
cad.
Boss.
You strange man living in my missing fiance. Are you a squatter?
A very bland fiance, too, for sex. I imagine someone with a bit more, if he is engaged, which I find it hard to believe anyway, someone with a bit more, like, fire to them or something.
Yeah. She's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly,
and also just totally making out with other dudes while Six is not
around. I was
going to
say, we do see Six make out with a woman, but technically it doesn't count because it's not Patrick McGowan.
Six is big into cuckolding. He just he wants to see other dudes with his woman.
The other link to Face Off is that in this episode, the signifier that he's actually number six is like that
same face brushing thing. Have you ever seen Opie and Anthony, but Patrice O'Neill? I didn't remember that from Face Off. Patrice O'Neill is just talking about that movie.
Yeah.
And they go on for like 5 minutes about the face rubbing thing, which is so weird that that's the thing that they do in the movie. Like, can you imagine just being in a relationship? Like, if Amy was here and I was just like saying bye and I just rubbed my hands on her face, it was like, it never upset her. Like,
did I have something on my face? Or?
It's just, if someone did that to me, I'd be like, don't fucking touch me. Like, get out of here. What are you doing?
Well, I can understand the idea in the writer's room where it's like, you need something visual that can tell the other person definitively that. This is not who I'm looking at. It's who I think it is. You know, that didn't make any sense, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can't have like a secret handshake because that's kind of stupid.
Right.
Because if you're doing it with a loved one, there has to be some sort of intimate exchange that convinces the other person that it's really you.
Right.
And it's
so stupid that no one would like fake doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of. Like, when you're in the room thinking up ideas, it seems like it's, oh, that's kind of nice because, you know, it's intimate, it's like loving touching of the face, and that's only something that her husband or fiance would do. So I could see why they would go with that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, I mean, once you see it in action, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Or it's just not a good idea.
This is just no good.
The trouble is, you see, there's nothing you can tell me which may not have been told you by the person you claim to be under sedation or hypnosis. I mean, we're all aware of truth drugs and other ingenious means of extracting information. It could all have been recorded and you could have learnt it parrot fashion.
Ask me the minutest details of anything you know that we did together.
The same problem applies.
I could never convince you then.
Only sufficiently to intrigue me, to make sure that you are watched and followed every inch of wherever you go.
So, speaking of this other stuff we learn about Six... we learn some interesting things, like we said, that he's got a fiance, and that he's his fiance's is his boss's daughter.
Yeah, his future father.
There's
his
a whole
boss.
Other show in there. I think this is kind of seems like a backdoor pilot to a spinoff.
Yes,
or the second season where he's dealing with spy stuff, but also dealing with his
family stuff.
It's like kind of like True Lies.
Yep.
Totally
forgettable father.
Yeah.
He's in it for a little bit, but I don't remember what the point of that scene was where he's with him.
Yeah, it's the point, I don't know, just to be like, he's been gone for a year.
He didn't tell you where he's
been. That's the other thing they do in this episode where they set up this thing where it's like, that's why they need the face thing, because every time he tries to tell someone something, they go, well, what if you could have just gotten that information. There's nothing you could tell me that would convince me because you could have just gotten that information.
Yep.
So what do you think about this information that we learn about Six? Do you think it's beneficial? It's weird because I was watching it and I kind of felt like, oh, this is interesting because given the way that we've been looking at this, especially his relationships with women and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, when I see that he's got a fiance, what kind of clicked in my head was, oh, well, that to an extent explains his treatment of women because he's always getting away from...
He's unavailable?
Yeah, he's always avoiding the romantic aspect because as a man of principles, I could see how he would still maintain that he is engaged and will eventually come back and get married and all that kind of shit. But
we've booked the dates. Yeah. No,
all of this is fine. But I have to be out by August 16th of the next year.
We're choosing flowers. I will be back.
Hydrangeas are fine.
Roses are spectacular. This is an annoying thing of speaking.
Raspberry cake.
I had a funny thing about that because going into this episode, if you had asked me that question, I probably would have been like, you know, I could do with a little bit of Six background. I'd like to see what this guy's all about.
Yeah.
Then I saw it and I was like, I don't want to know anything else about this guy. The show works much better if he's just an anonymous sort of agent in the world.
Right.
And I mean, just the fact that he has a fiance, he's never brought this up. Like, even if it makes sense that he would react to women that way, but it's still just very easy to go, I'm engaged. You know, that's like.
And also, I mean, you would think that at the very least, the village would know.
And right, they would try and use it
as,
or something.
Yeah, and they would try to use it as leverage or something.
Yep, yep.
They
clearly do because they send him back to her place. It's very awkward. But I didn't care for this background knowledge about Six. It's totally out of character. And even if it was good, I don't know if it's really necessary.
Yeah. I think that it is unnecessary, and like you're saying, I don't need to know this stuff.
Yep.
Because it's another byproduct of the turn that this show takes genre-wise, because it grounds Six's character into something that it takes away a lot of his symbolism because he's just another guy.
Yep.
And having him do a mission outside of the village and making the village kind of, like I said, more like a specter type thing, grounds the village. A lot like I've said before about when you start seeing the guys who have to go around fixing the cameras inside all of the sculpted heads and shit.
Yeah.
It adds a level of realism and grounding to the village that I don't want.
Right, yeah, I'd agree with that.
And, I understand it to an extent because it's like, well, if you're going to keep going forward with this concept, you're going to have to change something. And I think I'm glad that they didn't.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they capped it at 17.
Yeah.
17, probably too many. At the very least, it could be 16 because you should get this fucking piece of shit out of here.
Right. I mean, I think they're definitely, it's definitely starting to show that there's only so many ideas you can have where a guy is stuck in a sort of prison. There's only so many prison stories you can tell. Eventually, you have to stretch it out, and he has to kind of get out. And they've even gotten him out before, and he just comes, he's brought back immediately. Right. But this is the first time, like you're saying, the village is just like, you know, you go out there. We need some shit to get done. You go do it, and then we'll bring you back. Also,
yeah, this is the first time where he's gotten out, and the reason he goes back is basically because he has to. No, I'm
I don't
sorry.
Even think he has to. Yeah, he'd like to.
Yeah, he want. Well,
he'd rather have
I guess,
his body
well,
back.
To be fair, he doesn't know that he needs to bring the scientist back to the village. He's just trying to find the scientist so he can reverse the process. But I guess he would have to go back to get his body. So
yes, he would have to go back either way. So it's, I don't even know why they don't just tell him. The village just be like, go get him, and when you bring him back, you'll get your body back.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's well, it's there is a bit that is a holdover from the original script that that does get really messed up in this in the way it ends up, and it's that they drop when they towards the beginning of the episode, number two is walking the colonel, Nigel Stock, into the amnesia room.
Yep.
Which is where they can erase your mind. Basically, they have full control over picking and choosing what they erase. And they said, oh, we can erase it back to any point that we want. This guy who's in here right now is having all of his, you know, he broke really quickly.
Yep.
So we're erasing all of the negative memories of the village, which is actually a pretty cool concept. I'm surprised they should have taken that and run with it.
Yeah.
And done something else.
Yep.
So,
oh, that's right, because they wipe Six's memory of everything previous.
Right. So the original script had Six getting his mind wiped. This still doesn't even really work. But it
first draft.
Yeah. It. I'll pull it up and read it. Okay. So the original script for this episode, this is from Wikipedia, is significantly different from the aired version. While working with the same constraint of Patrick McGoohan's limited availability. The beginning is similar, with number two meeting the colonel, here named Oscar, the man whose body number six's mind will occupy. But in this earlier draft of the story, number six awakens in his flat in a furious mood, storming to his office to angrily resign. Only at the office does he realize that his appearance is not his own, and that a year of his life is missing. So, basically, what they did was this idea that they wipe his memory back to the point where he's going to resign.
And just watch him do
and
it
just,
again.
Yeah. And in which case, though, I don't know why they have to change the body, because that makes more sense to do it if it's just Six.
Yes,
because then Six would actually go there and resign, and you'd be like, oh, that's why. Yeah, this is the first thing they should have done.
Right, yeah. That's a cooler idea than I think it ends up possibly could end up being, because I don't. What would you even learn from his resigning again? He would just end up in the same position,
right? Yeah, but at least you'd know. I mean, if you're trying to find out why he resigned,
you would just have
you
the
would
people
find
ask
out
him.
Why you would find out why, because he would go. I mean, but it doesn't work because he's got a different body. So, like,
right?
What's the point?
Yeah, he'd walk in, I'm resigning. Who the fuck are you? Get out of here, you short, stocky man.
Yeah, and so it's. That's an element of the story that they drop in that just doesn't make any sense. It's like, because that's when he wakes up and he thinks it's the day that he left.
Yes.
Or the day that he was
going to resign.
The thing I was just thinking of that actually is really funny is if they take him back to the day he left, day he was abducted, he wakes up just like it's any other like Tuesday. And he's
in the village you're talking about.
Back in Britain.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, you have to think if they're wiping his memory back to the point where it's the same day that he resigned and was taken, right?
Yep.
You would think, much like in the original script, he would wake up hell bent on going to resign because he's pissed off and he wants to go do that. Yeah. But he wakes up and he's like, I'm awake. I'm in my house. Let's see what's on the door. Oh, right. It's Janet's birthday. You know, it's like, what the fuck is that?
That's true. Yeah, he doesn't.
Oh, you know what? I should probably swing by the office and tell him I'm not coming in on Monday or ever. Yeah. 5-day weekend.
See, I'll get fired up on the car ride over. Yeah. I'm a little laid back right now, but I'll listen to some talk radio and get myself real fired
up. I'll get in the Lotus, go for a jaunt, then I'll put on some, the edgier Steely Dan, and I will go in and give them what for.
Listen to some angry Phil Collins. Yeah, that's true. Just real sloppy. It's too bad because I like the general idea.
Where is he? Did he perfect the reversion process? If he didn't, it's a pity.
So, let me pause this to you.
Sure.
I think, as I was saying, you know, we've both kind of agreed, there is a good core concept here that's just not used well.
Yep.
Right? So, I think the mind-swapping thing could have been a continuation of the idea that they've been playing to this point, right? And it goes back into what I've said, I think I've said this before, about if I ever got the chance to do a remake of this series, the number one thing I would do is make a clear arc of increasing aggression and increasing what you're stripping away from Six to try and break him down.
On half of the village you're talking about?
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
And I think this would have been a great addition where, like in Schizoid Man, you're making him question his own identity, right?
Yep.
In this one, you're actually taking away his body.
Yep.
So you've gone for his spirit. You've effectively killed him a couple times, like to the world, and you know,
right?
Like in A Change of Mind, we were talking about how it would have been better if it had been focused more on, oh, we've actually erased you from even the village.
Right.
At this point in Do Not Forsake Me, I always get the two mixed up because A Change of Mind is a much better title for this.
Yeah, episode. That's true. Which one is Change of Mind? Change of Mind
is the one where the lobotomy one, the one we did last
week.
Oh,
right. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
But this is, I think this would be a good escalation even further, where it's like, yeah, we're gonna take away your body now.
Yeah,
we're gonna put you in a different person's head. So, not even I mean, that actually could have been kind of an interesting thing, where if they, you know, they put him in another body, and it's like, we're gonna put you in another body and send you back home, and it doesn't even matter because people won't even know who you are.
Yeah,
but if I was Six, I'd be like, great, I guess I'll just fuck off and get out of here. But I think what would have been really cool is if they had done it, if they had been able to do this episode without the limitations of not having McGowan,
yep.
I think what they should have done is they should have done the body swap thing, right? And they should have sent the number Six with the other guy's mind back to England.
Right.
And had number Six in the colonel's mind back in the village.
In his body.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you could have that sort. You could still have McGowan. You could have McGowan even like playing a different character because he would have a different mind, much like Face Off.
Yep.
And you would still get that Six dealing with having a different body, you know, no longer having his own self in the village. I don't know exactly how you wrap that up. I don't know how you get them to go back or whatever, but maybe they pee in the same fountain and they magically go back or something. Whatever Freaky Friday is, they each throw a penny into the fountain in the village center at the same time. But you know, I think that way you could have kept pushing the themes that you're doing, that you had been doing up to this point, but you also get Six out of the village. You can have this other alternate, more, you know, task-based show.
Yep.
But you still have the same themes that you've been playing with up to this point.
Yeah. You could have, you know, Two goes into the body of Six and goes back to further break Six. He's going to go back and destroy the life that he had before he was captured, you know, like have him go back and sabotage it. And then Six would have to go back in the other body to prevent Two from screwing everything up.
Yeah. I think that's the tough part is because, I mean, if it kind of requires you to get both of them out of the village.
Yeah. Which up to this point has taken entire episodes to do.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's the tough part, but I think there's something there you could play with. At the very least, I like the idea of switching the minds as a further way to break down Six.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I guess we should say, where would you put this in our fictional reorganizing? Where would you put this episode? Assuming that you're putting it in there at all.
I think it belongs it kind of has to go late.
Yeah.
Which is kind of unfortunate. It would make almost more sense to expose his previous life earlier, maybe, but I think him wanting to come back to the village feels like a later ideology that he would have.
Yeah.
In the early, if this was an early episode and he got out, I'd have a hard time with him so easily wanting to go back.
Right.
Where that kind of makes more sense later on, where he's resigned himself to he's always going to get stuck there, so he might as well just go back and get his body while he's at it.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, well, if it were up to me, I would just take this out.
Take it out, yeah.
I wouldn't even put it in.
Yep.
Interestingly enough, one of the episode we're doing next, Living in Harmony, actually was removed in the initial run.
Yeah.
Not because it was a shitty episode, but we'll talk about that in the next episode. But I would switch these out in a heartbeat. If you had to take one out, I would take this out 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make the argument, oh, well, it's a more traditional spy show. It'll be easier to grasp. No, because if you have been watching The Prisoner and this happens, it doesn't make a lot of sense and it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been watching The Prisoner and this is the first episode you watch, it makes even less sense.
I think it would just be astoundingly boring if this is the only Prisoner episode
there's
you watch.
So much driving footage in this episode.
Yeah, on green screen.
There's a quote towards the beginning. I can't remember exactly where. I think it's before they change the bodies. Number two says to the colonel, he says, we're going to have somebody watching your every move. And the colonel says, that sounds like a tremendous waste of time. And I think that sums up this episode perfectly. Because, 80%, it's like a... It's like Rocky IV.
Yeah.
If you watch Rocky IV and take out the montages, that movie's about 15 to 20 minutes long.
Yep. Yep.
This episode, if you took out all of the scenes of driving or going up and down an elevator, it's not like...
Turbo lift. It was very, very turbo lift.
It's not even like you get in there and move the plot along. It's like we're literally going to stand in this elevator box and you're going to watch us go up two floors.
Yeah, yeah.
We get to see a beautiful drive through Austria for some reason. Yeah,
the mountain drive.
Yeah.
And their sports cars.
Even in Danger Man, unless I'm remembering it incorrectly, when they do this shit in Danger Man, it's not like you watch him drive from fucking England to Austria.
Right.
It's like, you know, you see him pull up or something, but it's not like waste 40 minutes watching you drive.
The technique of showing the map implies he's going to Austria. You know, like when you pan over a map, you're implying the characters are moving across the map.
I actually did like that once he figures out where from the slide technique where he's overlaying these slides and it's giving him a secret message, and he finds out that the scientist Saltzman is who. Do we think this guy was a Nazi?
Or I think that's what's implied.
Yeah, or is it not? Because he, I mean, Saltzman, I think it's Saltzman. That's, you know, a Jewish
kinda
name,
Jewish.
I think. I don't know. But he's also in hiding. But he's in hiding in Austria.
Right, yeah, like there's a whole lot of things going on about it.
Anyway, whatever. Like everything in this episode, it was not defined or thought out. But yeah, that slide technique, he learns that the guy is in Austria. I did like that he pulls out like an atlas, and he's like, Austria, Austria, and then he's like,
B3, there it is.
And it's like, oh, this town is right here. Okay, I know how to get there. I've looked at this map of the entire country. Also, did you notice that the address on the letter that Saltzman has is 20 Port Marion Road?
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Interesting. It's a nice little touch.
Yeah.
You've made your point, I accept it.
But you overlook one thing. Sentimental people are sometimes stupid. Very stupid. Wait, please.
Oh, so that's the other thing at the end. Like, it's the mechanics of getting this through the plot are just so clunky. Like we've said, he has that thing where literally everyone he talks to, and where he says, I am number six. I am this other person. They're like, no, anything you tell me, you could have learned. Like, I like that they get around having to have him say his name.
Yes, when he's like, "Well, what's your other code name?"
Yeah, what's your name? He's like, "Well, my code name in France was Duval, and in Germany it was Schmidt, I think."
Yeah.
And my
and in Cyborgonia I was like ZM73 or something like that.
Yes, I believe. Yes, ZM73. Okay, yes, you're correct. That is his code number.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Well, you could have gotten that. I mean, he could have told you that."
I feel he does not put up nearly a strong enough fight to be like, "Listen, motherfuckers, I am, you know, blank."
Yeah.
You know,
that should be the thrust of the episode.
Right.
You know, like we were saying, it should be, we're going to put you in another body. We're going to give you your life back. And no one, and it's, you're going to break because you can't have, all you want is your existence and your life.
Yeah.
And we're going to take that from you by giving it back to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, the mechanics, like, when he finally gets to Saltzman, I can't remember which one it is. I think it's Seltzman.
Seltzerman,
who's acting as a barber in Austria. Even then,
his parents were killed by barbers in Austria.
Even then, Seltzman's like, "Well, you know, anybody could have told me that. I mean, you could have just asked him." But then Seltzman like gives it away because Six says, "Surely you would agree that everyone's handwriting is as identifiable and different as a fingerprint, right?" He's like, "Yeah, so." It's like, "Well, if you have that letter I sent you, then I could show you it's my handwriting." And he's like, "Well, if it is you, you should know that I would have gotten rid of that letter."
And he's notice I misspelled Beverly Hills on the letter.
"Do you have the cadaver note?" It's like, "Of course. If you should know that if I had the cadaver note, I would have burned it or anything else that was written similarly." But then he's like, "But, you know me, I'm a sucker for nostalgia. So, yes, I do have that note." He's like, "Well, you told him you have the note." So
I know. It's very frustrating. That was a reference to The Jinx, too, for everyone wondering. But
yeah, you should watch The Jinx. It's really good.
Just kind of, I don't even know if I didn't mind as much when I was watching it. It's certainly one that really falls apart when you poke at it.
Yeah.
And I think that you might not even like it enough to poke at it.
Yeah.
Kind of to be like, well, what the hell was that? I guess that's all said and done.
It's so much like regular TV of the time because you don't really need to pay attention to it.
No.
You know, it's got a couple cool beats in it where they do the slide thing and one or two other spy things were kind of cool. But you could put this on, unlike most of the other episodes in this show, you could put this on while you're folding laundry and get the gist of it and feel like, "Oh, that was all right."
Yep.
You know? That was kind of like an episode of Man from U.N.C.L.E.
"The man who's just flying out of here
is not who you thought it was."
"I don't believe it. I watched. I saw everything."
"The good doctor's mind now inhabits a body perhaps not to his liking. The colonel's. Dr. Saltzman had progressed more than any of us had anticipated. He can and did change three minds at the same time. He is now free to continue his experiments in peace."
Yeah, so how would you rate the plan for this one?
It's actually a pretty good plan. I was thinking about this because it works. They get kerfuffled.
That's true. It does. That's a good point. It does work.
They get kerfuffled at the end because they don't think it's suspicious at all when the scientist's like, "I will do it, but I need to be alone by myself and it's going to take 12 hours.
Yeah.
Come over and look at
the
me."
The ending is that's another thing about the ending. So, sorry, before we get into the rating, in the original script, the way it ends is they don't find out that the scientist, Seltzman, has switched his brain with the colonel's brain until Seltzman is in the helicopter out of range.
Okay.
Because that's the other thing, is like, as soon as they find out, we've just learned that if you get in that helicopter and try and fly away, it's going to turn right back around.
Well, they also figure it out, I would assume, before the guy even leaves the building. Because the guy walks out the door and Six pops up and he's like, "Ha-ha, he's in his
Six
body."
Six ruins the whole thing.
And then it magically cuts to the helicopter. But the guy was barely like out the door by the time this all happened. And it's like, you could just bring him back, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just, he totally just, Six totally blows it.
But I also felt a little bad for the colonel, who I didn't feel deserved death at the end of this. You know, it's kind of an unfortunate thing for him to just be in that body, but I didn't feel like the Colonel was ever a super nasty agent of the village.
No.
I felt like he was just some like salesman that they pulled in. And
yeah,
like,
he was
just
a dude.
Yeah. He's called the Colonel, but it's like, I didn't really understand.
So there was another thing I read that having him called the Colonel may have been a miscommunication in McGoohan's absence, because there's been a few other episodes where we've seen Six interacting with his superiors, yep, and his superiors are always named the Colonel.
Yep.
And in the original script, the Colonel character was named Oscar. Yep. So there's some speculation that since McGoohan wasn't around and Markstein wasn't around, when they rewrote the script, that shit got, like, there was probably some note from McGoohan being like, don't forget this guy has to be named Oscar, or someone, you know,
right,
yeah, I mean, needs to be named the Colonel. And they just blew it and named the wrong, they named the wrong character.
Yeah, because he's not very military. He doesn't look like a colonel. Like, when he's wearing a suit when he comes in. He's not wearing a uniform or anything like that. I don't know why he needs to be a colonel.
Yeah.
So whatever.
In the ending, in the original script, again, the original script, while not perfect, sounds like it would have been much more satisfying.
Yep.
Because in the end is great. It says, at the end, Six sits with the dying Saltzman before revealing that the reversal process didn't need three men. Only one could end up free, says number Six in this brief scene. It could have been me, but I felt it should be Saltzman because I'm going to escape anyway. I mean, that's badass. That's how you end that episode.
Yeah,
you know,
you
don't just have him go, by the way, in case you were wondering how this worked.
You dicks. This is, see that guy who just left?
I suppose I should have waited longer, though, because he's probably about 20 feet from this room and very easily catchable.
Very sad. Poor like Six.
Six didn't even make it to the helicopter when he was pretending to be Curtis and Schizoid Man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had like much, much more time to pull that off than the Seltzman would have to pretend to be this guy.
Yeah, it's a drive to get to the helicopter landing pad or wherever they are, but very, very disappointing.
Yeah.
In an ending, yeah, that just sort of, it is, he just pops up out of his, aha, I'm here.
Anyway, so back to the rating. How would you rate this? You
it's
were saying
a, it's
does,
a five. Five. It's got to be a yeah. five because it works, except for the fact that they screw up the ending.
Yeah, that's the weird thing is, I mean, you're right. It does work. Technically, the plan is a five, even though the episode's like a one.
Yep.
I think it would have been a stronger five if they had done something more in line with the show and not just a spy thing.
Yes, I'd agree with that. But in terms of two gets what he wants, basically, and, you know, that's a success in his book. He loses the doctor. So I guess they technically lose their ability to do the brain swap thing, but that was not their goal going in, I guess.
Yeah. So I think the only thing that's left for this one is trivia. I think we covered a lot of it, though. This is the first episode completed without the original production team. Many left when the series was cut short after they thought they were going to get 13 more, but it ended up having to just wrap up with four episodes. It's the first episode without Markstein, which we talked about. This was drafted as the start to the 13-episode second season. Which would have seen Six doing missions for the village in a more traditional spy show setup.
Hmm.
And, yeah, covered why Markstein left. That's pretty much all the trivia for this episode.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we're recording Living in Harmony back to back, because these two shows, I think, have a lot more in common than you would think. Like you were saying, they kind of are going for the same thing.
Yep.
But I think Living in Harmony does it way better.
Yep.
But we will get to that next time. Oh, there is actually one more thing I want to talk about. Going back to last week's episode, Change of Mind, which ends with the villagers declaring number two unmutual and then chasing him off. And we had a moment where we were talking about, well, now that number two has been compromised, why doesn't number six try to escape? You know, we placed it, we placed it deep into the run because, well, he's in that transition where he's, you know, realizes anything he does is futile.
Yep.
Shane from the Prisoner Intro Cast was kind enough to send me some information saying that in the last shot of that episode where you see number six walking away, there is a shot of Rover off of the road, like behind some bushes. And that has been referenced as, I think, because other people have kind of mentioned this as well in different places. Well, why doesn't he try to escape? And I think they reference that as, oh, that's why he didn't escape, because Rover was right there.
Okay.
I don't buy that.
Yep.
Because that seems like it was a shot used that was trimmed. You know what I mean? So, like, if there's a longer shot, maybe.
Isn't there a shot where he's walking and Rover's bouncing behind him?
No. He's just walking. I mean, there have been episodes that have ended that way, but this one specifically just has him walking up the road.
Yeah.
And with
the thing's just off to the side.
Yeah. Like, you can barely see it. It's like behind some bushes.
Okay.
And I think some people have used that as an excuse as to, oh, well, I mean, it's such a quick shot, but, oh, this is why he doesn't escape, because Rover's right there.
Rover's always there.
Yeah. Rover. Yeah. But, I don't buy that as an excuse, because, that shot is so quick. It feels like it's cut from another longer sequence.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Yep.
And you could postulate that, oh, well, the longer sequence is probably he starts to go down the road, but then Rover bounces across or something and he turns around and walks back the other way.
Yeah. I'm even thinking there's a definite advantage to having your actors wear the same outfit.
Yeah.
You can just take shots from other episodes and if they work, you can insert them into things, which is interesting.
And why I don't accept that as an answer is because just because Rover's there doesn't mean that, like, that was, like you were saying, that could have been a stock shot.
Yep.
And I don't think, I think that unless it's in the show as a point, I don't think it counts.
You can't draw anything from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you used a shot from, I don't really know how to explain it, like, if you used a shot from Free For All in that episode for something, and then, you know, at the tail end of the shot happened to be one of those 6-for-2 signs or something, right, that you see for, like, half a second, I wouldn't postulate that, oh, well, maybe 6 is running for number 2 again or something. You know, like, I wouldn't put those two things together.
Okay, yeah.
It's just, it's not, it's kind of like when you see a movie and the DVD comes out and it has deleted scenes in it, and you try to explain how the movie would... when people say, oh, I didn't like that movie. And you say, well, if you had seen these deleted scenes, then it would have tied things up and you'd like the movie a lot more.
Yeah.
You can't say that, because those scenes are not in the movie.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right. Those... You have to accept the final product as what you're talking about, as opposed to, like, what people...
Exactly.
...meant.
Right, yeah.
Which is why interviews with, like, showrunners are obnoxious, because it's like... There are bad shows that the showrunner will be like, well, we were trying to do this. And it's like, well, it didn't work. So like, it doesn't change what you made just because you tried to do something differently.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. I mean, not that I'm some auteur or something, or like film director, but try to make something on film or try to make a video, and you'll realize you're giving... If you think that a lot of stuff is happening in... shows like this that is like intentional, you're dealing with someone with a superhuman brain who's able to do a lot of stuff that you're not even thinking about. Like, you know, it's tough to just put 4 shots in order to make things look good. And to add symbolism behind that is like, wow, you are a master of your craft at this point. You know, this isn't, this is something deep. It's just interesting. It's, I think people underappreciate how difficult making a TV show is.
Yeah.
So if you tried to make it, you'd be like, this is superhuman if someone actually made this with so many layers the way that things are.
It's interesting. I don't know how this really fits into everything, but it reminded me of I was reading a Cracked.com article.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cracked. Well, Cracked magazine is the same thing, but Cracked would have been nice.
About, you know... books that have been misinterpreted by everyone, including your English teacher.
Sure.
And they were talking about Fahrenheit 451.
Yep.
And how traditionally that book has been described as, oh, it's an ethos against the horrors of censorship and all that kind of stuff. And when Ray Bradbury was asked about it, he's like, no, this book is about how bad TV is for you. And
yep.
how TV is going to, you know, wreck your brain to the point where no one's going to be reading anymore.
Right.
And it got to a point, it reminded me of how McGoohan ended up talking about The Prisoner after The Prisoner, where what he said no longer mattered because everyone had their own interpretation of the show.
Yep.
Because Bradbury got to a point where people would tell him he was wrong. And he wrote the book.
Yep.
And he knew, quote unquote, what it was supposed to be about.
Right.
And to have someone else be like, no, you're incorrect. This is what it's about. It's like, how do you respond to that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I guess that kind of goes, I think creators have to let go of their work
yeah.
at that point.
Yeah, you do.
And you have to be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Cause
George Lucas.
Because my wife was a English teacher for a while. And English teachers doing their grading is interesting because if I was an English teacher and I asked you to think about a book, and you will say, we'll stick with 451.
Mm-hmm.
If you were like, Fahrenheit 451 is about the mistreatment of dolphins at SeaWorld,
yeah.
right? But you somehow backed that up.
Yes.
And you blew me away with your rationalization of how this all tied together and yep. it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You get an A.
Yep.
You know, because...
Oh, I've done that many times. Yeah.
It's like, that's the whole... Everyone's point is valid. The whole point of trying to break down what a book is about is to strengthen your, like, logical understanding of how these things are tying together
yeah.
and how you can represent it. It's like critical thinking.
Yeah.
And I'd agree that there are certain things that are way out there, but I also think that a lot of different interpretations are true. They're probably not what the creator had in mind, because that would be absurd, but... It's interesting to think about, I guess.
Yeah, I once wrote an essay for a English class in college that I linked Heart of Darkness, Faust, Frankenstein, and Darth Vader.
Yeah.
A, by the way.
Yeah, that's all it takes. You can find that up on the website. Link
I don't
the PDF
know.
If, of his
no,
report.
it was a blue book test.
So books.
I had to pull the Darth Vader card in the middle of a test. So.
I don't know how he did that. I have to like handwrite a post-it note at work now, and my hand cramps
up. Yeah, I can't
the third
do it.
Second.
I cannot write. You should see my fucking notes for this show. Nope. It's impossible to read. I have to write a Mother's Day card tomorrow, and I'm terrified.
We had to renew our passports, and today actually, and I was just filling out the form, and I was like, I have to take a breather. I can't. Yeah. I can't continue writing these things here.
It's yet I can type at the speed of thought. So
yeah,
you know
yeah.
that's the world we live in. Mario. Anyway, so. That's about it for Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. Oh,
which is
also
a stupid title.
Well, I forgot to mention, it's actually taken from a lyric from the theme song to the movie High Noon.
Okay.
And there's a dispute over why they used that title. One of the reasons is it was an in-joke about McGoohan abandoning them. To go to America to shoot a movie.
Yeah, that'd be clever.
And I can't remember the other one, but...
I like that first
one. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. And there's actually a Boston-based band, two-person band, called Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, mm-hmm. that does a lot of prisoner-based music. They're pretty cool. They actually have a video online, which I should send you. I don't know if I've sent it to you before. They did a shot-for-shot reshoot. Shot-for-shot remake of the opening credits of The Prisoner.
Yeah.
For their music video, shot entirely in Boston.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. They actually got a Lotus, too. I don't know where they got a Lotus 7, but I would love to ask them about it. I'm trying to see if they want to come on the show. But
interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, they're pretty cool. You should check them out. I'll put that up in the notes and stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's about it. Again, I'm not... I'm by no means an expert, so if you'd like to correct me or give me some trivia about something I may have missed, you can contact us at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @prisonerpodcast. I'd like to thank Shane Poole again for that info about change of mind. Always interesting to talk about that stuff. I'm always open to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Sure. You like Star Trek? We do a Star Trek podcast.
Do I?
Do I? We have a clip show coming up. Tune in for another clip show. Go to thepenskypodcast.com. You can find me on YouTube also. There's a bunch of gaming stuff on YouTube. The Penske File, you can find that. Go to thepenskyfile.com. There's something there too. Thank you.
Cool, cool. And yeah, we will be back next week with Living in Harmony. And yeah, there's some similarities here that it'll be interesting to talk about.
Uh-huh.
But until then, we will see you next time. Well, there you go. There was Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling. Hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to check out the notes at backinthevillage.com. And don't forget to check out Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling, the band. Their Prisoner video is very cool. And if you like comic books and you happen to be in the Portland, Maine area this weekend, on Sunday, May 17th, I will be at the Maine Comics and Art Festival. So if you feel like dropping by, we can talk about The Prisoner, chat about comics, anything you'd like. I'll be there all day. So, hope to see you. And if I don't, I'll see you next week with Living in Harmony. Thanks. Bye.